Sarah, your story makes me think that I was a chicken shit reporter when I was your age. Hey, this is Brief Remarks. Hi, welcome to Brief Remarks. I'm Susan, and today we are going to talk about Trump North, or at least elements of it that we've seen here. Over the past week, there was a really interesting incident or event, incident/event in Toronto at Canada Christian College, which is not too far for people who know Toronto from the Ontario Science Centre. But it was almost anything but science going on at Canada Christian College last week. Two very brave journalists went there and recorded it in unique ways for us. And we're going to open this podcast by talking to Zach Reuter and Sarah Hagee, and they're going to tell us a little bit about what happened at Canada Christian College last week. So, Zach, tell us a little bit about what you do. I know you're a writer, photographer, and filmmaker, but tell us what put you at the event.
The editor at Toronto-ist, Andrea Houston, asked me to cover it because she knows that I've done a lot of work with Ford Nation and the anti-sex ed movement in Ontario.
Oh, right. And so how was the event built?
Did you say all right or alt-right?
Both. How was the event built? Like, when your assignment editor saw it, what was it called?
It was called the Freedom Rally.
Mm-hmm.
Against Motion 103, M103.
Which is the motion in the House of Commons, which has turned out to be surprisingly contentious about whether the House of Commons should study Islamophobia.
And condemn it.
And condemn it.
System-wide, yeah.
Yeah. So this was a rally put on by Rebel Media, as we understand, against the motion and for freedom of speech.
Correct.
All right. What similarities does it have to Ford Nation?
Well, I mean, the Rebel Media, back when they were Sun, were big fans of Ford Nation. But I mean, the first thing that strikes me is that, not in terms of similarities, but in comparison to Ford Nation was actually really welcoming of immigrants and people from everywhere that they come. So that was a little bit different.
Yeah. So for people who haven't seen the video, tell us, just describe to us your video.
Well, I got there, didn't have too much time to interview people before it started. So I interviewed some people who are coming in, a woman with a MAGA hat, Make America Great Again. She basically said, I have no Muslim friends and I don't know any Muslim people.
Who's committing all these terrorist acts? They're Muslims, they're not Christians, they're not Buddhists.
But they're the ones who are, you know, committing all of this terrorism. And I sort of overlaid some of their views with a kind of like a enthusiastic singing of the national anthem from people who are at the front of the audience.
They were really getting into the anthem, we saw.
Yeah, and the lyrics really worked well, you know, like, you know, our, you know, in all our sons' command, you know, like it's loaded for sure.
And the man with the infidel T-shirt.
Just before they chop our heads off, they say, "Die infidel." I'm letting them know coming. Mess with me.
Yeah. Yeah. He basically said that Muslims think of him as the infidel, and before they cut his head off, they say, "Die infidel." So he said, "Come at me." So.
And there is a 7-year-old boy sitting next to him.
Yeah, that was maybe, his son.
Yeah. While he was talking about having his head cut off. The man with the views on Muhammad?
Yeah, I think he was possibly associated with the JDL, the Jewish Defense League, who is there doing security for the events, extra security on top of the private security hired by the rebel media.
So Jewish Defense League was doing security.
Yeah, additional security, yeah. Right. And I was debating whether I should have included that, but I thought, you know, it captures what the flavor of the event was.
And I think the image that the most searing image of the entire video is the woman who raises her hand. Can you tell us what happens there?
I mean, that's a little bit contentious. I mean, like, when is what appears to be a Nazi salute not a Nazi salute? And according to maybe the rebel media, it's when it is a Christian prayer salute. Yeah, but I mean, like, the rebel media, I mean, even Faith Goldie, who is the host of the
co-host of the event, who is the master of the
event, yeah. You know, she said that she acknowledged that people have been painting this event as a neo-Nazi white supremacist event. So
neo-Nazi anti whatever sort of event. I'm looking out at the crowd right now. This is a family. Looks pretty normal to me.
When we're talking Trump North, you can't just sort of easily discard the fact that Trump South has within its ranks actual neo-Nazis. I mean, one named Richard Spencer, when he held a rally and a bunch of hands came up and did the Nazi salute. So I know it may not be politically, you know, advantageous for the rebel to acknowledge that, but within Trumpism in the States, there's a growing and visible neo-Nazi support for those ideas.
So Sarah, you had an interesting way of going to this rally, sort of sticking out like a sore thumb. Can you tell everybody what you decided to do?
Well, I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, I'm a Muslim woman. I wear a hijab. So I decided to go as myself, which it was really weird. I mean, I was just kind of talking about it with my colleagues the day before. That's when I decided to go. And so I saw the event and we were kind of just like, oh, this is so weird and so crazy. I'm like, man, what if I went? And everyone was kind of like, are you sure about that? Like, do you feel safe doing that? Because, I mean, from videos of Trump rallies and these sort of events, they do get really heated sometimes. But I went anyway.
What was your biggest fear in going as yourself?
I don't know, because I mean, the
worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario, maybe some sort of confrontation with someone, a group of people yelling at me. I mean, there were much more of them than there was me. I was the only visible Muslim there. So, I mean, I really wasn't sure what to expect. I guess the worst case scenario, I was maybe thinking, okay, well, what if someone follows me out of here, or there's some sort of confrontation outside or something like that.
So tell us about when you arrived.
So I didn't go alone. I went with three of my colleagues. One was a photographer, one was covering the rally for news, and another was just kind of there to just see what would happen. So we walked in and there was security. So we went past security, and within 5 minutes, Ezra Levant went up to us and was like, who are you guys? and we told him we were, you know, journalists and writers from Vice. And he was like, that's fine. I believe in free speech, but you're not here as activists, right? And we're like, no, we're not here as activists. We're here as media. We're media people. And he was just kind of like, okay. But I mean, the subtext was, if anything happens, if you guys try and pull anything, you'll be kicked out. So, I mean, it was pretty obvious that we stuck out from the beginning. and then we took our seats and we were just kind of like, what the hell is going to happen now?
So sitting there, what was your sort of immediate impression? Tell us a little bit about what you told the readers of Vice about.
Well, I mean, immediately people were staring at me. There was no question about that. At first, I was kind of like, okay, are they just looking? Like, am I imagining this because I'm so hyper aware of myself right now? But I wasn't. I would look over to my colleagues and be like, is that person staring at me? And they would be just like, yeah, they definitely are. And it wasn't just regular stares. I mean, like fish out of water sort of thing. But it was like, they were glaring at me. And it was just really uncomfortable. I mean, there were times where people were just kind of like, what? Like the look on their face was like, what the hell is she doing here? And throughout the speeches, and then by the way, all the speeches were exactly the same. It was just one speech after another saying the exact same thing about how Muslims are like this and Islam's like this and there's a real threat and free speech, blah, blah, blah. But when they would say things to try and get the crowd going, so people would start cheering and stand up, like, you know, this one guy, one speaker, I forget his name, he said, I don't want my daughter to wear a burqa. And a bunch of people just kind of looked at me. And I was like, well, this isn't a burqa, one, and two, no one's going to make your daughter wear one. So that was really something.
Ezra Levant, for people who are unfamiliar with him, is he calls himself the rebel commander and I guess runs rebel media. He had some words to say about the origins of the Liberal MP who presented the motion too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I mean, honestly, like I said, all the speeches were kind of the same. So they all, after a while, they blended into one giant speech about how Islam's evil. But basically what I remember is Ikra Khalid, she's of Pakistani origin. I believe she came to Canada as a child. And
comes from Pakistan. I'm glad that Ikra Khalid left that failed state and came to our great country. But I do not want her to bring the values from where she was born with her. We believe in Canadian values, not Pakistan values.
And in my head, I'm like, you just said she came to Canada as a baby. What is she bringing to Canada from her, like, childhood? You know, it didn't make any sense to me.
Both of you, can you tell us whether you've ever been to events like this before? Or you're journalist. This isn't your first assignment. Have you ever been to anything like this before?
No, I haven't. This is my first time at any event like this. I've been writing for 2 years, and this is here at Vice is my first staff job, which I started in October. But none of my previous work required me to ever go somewhere like this, or I never really had the access to go or the support. So the reason why I did go is because I knew, you know, I have these, my supervisors and editors are all really supportive. They all really care about my safety and respect my choices. So I knew I wasn't going into it alone. You know, whatever abuse I would get online or anything, I knew that I would have people backing me up and helping me through it. So it was the first time I went to anything like this.
Zach, you've had a bit of experience with things like this, right?
Well, it's a bit easier for me as someone who, you know, is white to kind of go into these spaces and, you know, not be kind of like, you know, discriminate against right from the outset. But I've covered, you know, Pegida as a group of, you know, people against the Islamization of the West when they've tried to have rallies. I also did a lot of coverage of various rallies and counter rallies between groups that want to free Palestine and the others who are sort of Zionists and the JDL. And also, covered a lot in documentary form, a group called CANACE, Canadians for Charter Equality, who are these kind of racist white nationalist provocateurs that are working against the Haudenosaunee land defenders and where what we would call Caledonia. So yeah, I've been following right-wing white nationalist and racist organizing in Ontario for a while.
Another question to both of you is You know, there's a feeling in Canada that what we saw with the Trump rallies last year could not happen in Canada. Do events like this say something different?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've always known about groups like the Rebel, this kind of far right leaning, you know, these groups, these people. But I personally myself, I didn't know how bad it was or how organized they were until I went to one of these events. I mean, there were almost 1,000 people there for sure. And it showed me that, yeah, this thing could very well happen here. And also, I mean, they feel empowered by Trump. They feel empowered by these things. Like I mentioned in the article, you know, M103 is probably a great thing to happen to Rebel Media, because now they can be like, oh, well, you know, look what these Muslims are doing. Islamization or whatever, it's coming here now. You know, we have to start fighting. We have to start mobilizing. So it for sure can happen in Canada. And anyone who doesn't think it can, they're being naive or ignorant. And everyone needs to open their eyes and see that it could very well happen here.
And there's been a tendency by the mainstream media, which I've worked most of my life, to ignore things like this, you know, that why give oxygen to speech like this? Where do you guys land on that? Do we ignore this? If a white supremacist falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, is that the best attitude, or do we need to be in there more?
I really think there's a certain way, there's a way to cover it. I mean, with Trump, a lot of the way he was covered was kind of, it was seen as a joke or not taken seriously or not treated like this is something that can happen or a serious threat. But I really feel like there's a way to cover it and show this is happening without kind of, you know, giving them power. In my piece, I didn't really mention any of their names. I mentioned Rebel Media, but I didn't give a backstory about who Ezra was or who Faith is.
And that was deliberate.
I didn't have to. Yeah, it was deliberate because I mean, first of all, I was for a global audience, so it would have taken way too long to explain who these people are. And second of all, I really do feel like I didn't want to give them a power or a platform. And it is really difficult to try and figure out, you know, how can I talk about these people without giving them power? But I really feel, you know, as long as it's being taken seriously and the point is to show this is happening here, we have to do something about it. I say that's the best way to cover it.
Zach, what about you?
Well, with the example of the Rebel rally, there were about four sitting MPs, or not sitting MPs, but MPs and conservative leadership hopefuls. So that's really mainstream, and I thought that was important to document that they were there. Not all of them, obviously, but afterwards, the next week there was a protest outside of a mosque in downtown Toronto, you know, with signs that were saying no to Islam, and I decided not to cover that for the same purpose of not giving it oxygen. And I was happy with the way that it was covered in terms of, like, there's a counter demonstration and people post it on their social media and stuff like that. But I mean, it's definitely a good question. Like, you know, how do you draw the line between public interest and just exposure, that you're giving through covering it. But one of the things in covering it, especially like a rebel rally, for me as a journalist, is that you know, when it comes down to it, like these are people who have certain beliefs, but they're still worthy of, you know, being, when I'm interviewing them, at least being treated with compassion and dignity, even if you know, they have some positions that are, you know, discriminatory against other people. I still think that as a journalist, it's important to understand the motivations for what brings people out to events like that.
I'd like to close by asking both of you what the reaction has been to your articles. Sarah, what have you been hearing from people?
me personally, yeah, there was a ton of really crappy comments. You know, a lot of people saying exactly what you think. I'm not going to repeat them. Because also, I mean, the Rebel did kind of do like a thing about how Vice is, you know, fake news or whatever.
They even said fake news, but, right?
Yeah, they said fake news. But overwhelmingly, I think most people, like, the response has been overwhelmingly positive. Way more kind messages and support than not. I think the main takeaway for me was that, you know, a lot of people had the same reaction I did, where they were just kind of like, whoa, like, this is happening. You know, I didn't think Canada had it this bad, or, you know, I didn't think that there were this many people, or they spoke this way. So a lot of people, there was a lot of shock, and a lot of people, you know, being like, well, what can I do? What am I supposed to do? You know, which is really good in my opinion. I mean, as long as there's more good than bad in my Twitter mentions, I'm happy.
So you actually think some good can come out of articles like this?
Oh, for sure. And it was 100% worth it for me. You know, even though I it was a really bad experience, and, you know, I did get a lot of hate for it. To me, I would do it again for sure. It was totally worth it.
And Zach, I take it you would do it again too?
Oh yeah. I'd be interested in covering what happens. Yeah.
Well, thank you, both of you. It's amazing. As I said, you're very brave to walk into events like this. They aren't the kind of political events we're used to, but maybe we better start getting used to them. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thanks.
So, Alan, what did you think of that?
Well, I thought two brave journalists who covered an event that really needed to be covered. I mean, I saw them on Facebook and I shared them widely and got tons and tons of hits. So I thought it was very compelling. Her going in an almost a participant observation kind of way to see how people would react to a hijabi woman being at an event like that.
Very brave.
Is a brave, interesting kind of journalism. Him just getting some video because people want to see, and some of it's contested, what was really going on there. But that's how I saw what the hosts were saying, how people in the audience were reacting. So that's what journalists should be doing.
So I'm sitting here with my friend and colleague, longtime colleague, Alan Thompson, who is a unique kind of journalist who lives his journalism. He teaches journalism at Carleton University. He is a journalist still, writes, thinks, comments. And he ran as a Liberal candidate in the last election, which was filled with issues such as this, as we remember. So I asked Alan to come in and listen to these two young journalists, brave young journalists, with me and talk a little bit about how we handle Trump North when it comes here. First, I'd wanted to ask you, Alan, because we've mentioned it on this podcast before, your visit to a Trump rally during the campaign and what you saw there.
Yeah, I experienced the real thing and a little glimpse of it. I just happened to be in Arizona on holiday in August and noticed that Trump was going to be doing a rally the next day. Went online, signed up, got a ticket, thought there might be security or something, but I just joined the thousands of people who went to this rally, got up as close as I could to the front, and decided I'm not going to take notes here. I took some video, I tweeted a bit, but I just felt a little uneasy because people were looking over my shoulder, looking at what I was tweeting. And Trump very characteristically spent a lot of time bashing the media. This really, really harsh, overt, brutal, they're disgusting people, and they're right there, they're back there, all behind a big pen. The media were in a protective environment. And everyone in the crowd would turn, would be hollering at these journalists. It was pretty scary.
It was sort of like going in a hijab to a to a rally. You had mentioned, I think, in previous interviews that the journalists had actually said to you that they were afraid, that the American journalists had learned to watch themselves at these rallies.
I mean, half an hour after the event was over, people were still crowding around the media pen, shouting, hurling abuse, pointing at these journalists. So I managed to worm my way up close to the barrier and just said to this one, a woman journalist who was there, I said, hey, good work, like good on you. congratulations. And she just looked up like, who are you? I said, well, I'm a journalist. I'm from Canada. Really? Canada? So what's it going to be like the day after the election at the border? And she was serious. Mm-hmm. I thought she was joking, but she was literally kind of plotting, is she going to leave the country?
Were you surprised when you watched Zach's video? Like, did you see echoes of what you'd seen in Arizona in Zach's video?
Certainly. I mean, it's difficult. You're watching video, you're watching clips. You don't get to talk to any of these people. Yeah. Who is this woman who was holding her arm up in the air? Was it some kind of gospel thing or what was it? But still, it's interesting just the crowd dynamic. Mm-hmm. This message has an appeal. It reaches some people. There's no doubt whether alt-right is the correct terminology, because I don't think that all people who are attracted to Trump and his blunt messaging fall into this category of alt-right. No. Clearly, there's this extremist, white nationalist, quasi-neo-Nazi element that he is appealing to, and he knows he's appealing to. But there's a much broader spectrum, and that's why I think journalistically, I noted Zach was talking at the end there about how you have to treat these people. He even used the word compassion. Mm-hmm. You know, that journalistically, you just have to treat them as people who have a view and who are attending a political function. And I think it's really valuable that he recorded what was said. That's how I learned about it.
Yeah, it was presumably what would put four conservative leadership candidates at that rally too, which made it, you know, that's more of a mainstream kind of thing we would cover. When you watched the conservative leadership candidates and that, what were you thinking? I was thinking I don't know that I've ever seen politicians playing to this particular dynamic. To me, that's new in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, and Kelly Leach has led the way in this, right? And I think she's not a Donald Trump, but she is definitely trying to apply some of what she and her media strategists must see as what worked for Trump. And I think we do need to be careful. Many of us love to chuckle at the Trump cartoons and the memes and the kind of buffoonery. And yes, personally, I think he is a bit of a buffoon, but I think we also have to be very careful. There is a media strategy that's being deployed here. There is some thought going into this. Whether they're right or wrong, I think they are doing things for a reason. Somebody like Leach is trying to tap into that and to see, can she find the same kind of resonance with elements in Canada, maybe more so in rural Canada, that are drawn to Trump's messaging? And can she build a constituency in that way? It's not going to be a lot of people. It's not going to be anywhere near a majority of voters. But when you're running in a leadership contest, you're trying to build a block of people that will support you, that will be drawn to you. And she's using the same tactics of being a bit outrageous, not explaining herself. She has yet to explain how you would actually test people for their Canadian values. I'm waiting to see the polygraph kit that you can use to figure out what people's values are. But she has no intention of explaining it, because it's just a blunt instrument to say something that can appeal to a certain constituency.
Tell people a little bit about where you're from, because you're in what would be seen as the Ontario heartland in many ways.
Yeah, so I ran in Huron-Bruce, which is Huron County, Bruce County, southwestern Ontario, hour and a half, 2 hours northwest of Toronto. It's a textbook rural riding. There are no big cities. It's a riding made up of small towns, no airport, no train stations, no TV station. So it's textbook rural. And you would think this might be a place that would be a hotbed of this kind of feeling. And yet, you know, a few weeks ago after the Quebec shootings at the mosque in Quebec City, I contacted, there is a mosque in Kincardine. It's not really formally a mosque. It's the Islamic Center, but people pray there. It was right next door to the building that was my campaign headquarters. And so I contacted them and asked, are you doing any kind of an event, a vigil? And they didn't necessarily have plans. So we worked on something very quickly, held this event in small town Ontario. 250 people came and stood in front of that mosque with candles and listened to people speak and were there sort of in solidarity. You know, I was surprised by the crowd. I was half expecting a fair bit of nasty mail or response on Facebook, and there was very, very little. So it's hard to peg, you know, where are people at? How many of those who are drawn to this Trump North leech message are just a bit uneasy with how quickly society is changing, and they don't know quite what to do about it, and they're attracted to it.
And yet, during the 2015 election, we saw these issues raised, the niqab, the little Alan Kurdi on the beach. How did that play out in Huron, Bruce?
I think it held some resonance. It was an issue. We had numerous candidate debates, and one of the most heated exchanges, it's a conservative MP who's the incumbent there. He won the election, although by, you know, pretty close margin. The nastiest exchanges in our debates did touch on the issue of the niqab or the bill to strip Canadian citizenship and deport people if there was any link to a terrorist offense. And there was one point where I basically repeated Trudeau's a Canadian is a Canadian is a Canadian. We do not do this. We do not strip people of their citizenship in this country. If they do something wrong, they go to jail. And he turned to me and just said, Alan, you don't know this area, and people aren't going to agree with you. And I still don't know which of us was right. My campaign manager kind of slapped me on the back afterward and said, you know what? If we lose this election for saying a Canadian is a Canadian is a Canadian, so be it. So it's out there. The sentiment is there. I'm not sure it is as deeply rooted as you see when you look at those who are at these Trump rallies.
1,000 people is a lot of people, though.
Yeah, it is a lot of people.
I remember a long time ago when the Reform Party was first starting, a reporter at the Globe named Miro Sunetig went to one of the early rallies and encountered some views like this. Somebody, he put it in the story, told him he looked like a nice Aryan boy. Mm. But I think the difference from the start of the Reform Party, as we've discussed, to now is that Preston Manning pushed those people to the side. Even there is an argument whether Stephen Harper actually marginalized those people or just, but I think what we're confronting right now and why we're talking about it on this podcast is that there's a sense now that journalism has to look, stare this down more, and that politicians like conservative leadership candidates actually have to go and talk to these people. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this going though?
Well, I just think we need to be, because Trump has been so successful in bashing the media and convincing a broad swath of people that journalists can't be trusted, we have to work even harder at being vigilant, being fair. Just the other day, was listening to Tony Clement being interviewed on CBC. Mm-hmm. I thought the interviewer was doing a good job. I didn't find him over the top, belligerent, pushing Clement to say, what do you want the government to do differently? Clement wouldn't say what he was thinking, which is he wants the RCMP to stop people at the border and return them to the U.S. That's what he's advocating, but he won't say it. And so the journalist just needs to be persistent, polite. Sorry, you're not answering my question. Can you please say exactly what it is you mean? No code words, no kind of generalizations. And it's the same on the Canadian values question. You know, I think we need to somehow get away from the personalities and the buffoonery that this is all nuts because it's just Trumpisms. Well, with Trump too, we need to look more closely at the policies. What are they actually advocating? And try to drag this discussion to the politics. What is being advocated? What are they suggesting? Does it make any sense? And I think the Canadian values test, you can reach people by saying, of course we want people who share our values and we should be asking people those questions. Well, we already do that. Immigrants are vetted. So it's kind of nonsense when you get it to the level of, okay, let's turn this into a policy discussion, Kelly Leach. How will you test people for Canadian values? What you are suggesting is idiotic. It cannot be done. So it's not just should we do it. It can't be done under the charter. So it's a nonsensical policy position. It's just meant to whip people up and to generate support.
Do you think this is going to be the dominant issue of the, do you think it's these kind of issues are going to be the ones that frame the next election campaign?
Well, they kind of framed the last one. And I think positively for Justin Trudeau, I think he was able to make a case. The NECAB issue is not the Canadian way. And people bought it and agreed with it and supported him. I think there's still a high level of support on that kind of, just this kind of existential thing. What's it mean to be a Canadian? What kind of society are we? What do we represent? I think a majority of people still like the idea that people around the world who need protection think of Canada as a place that's going to give them asylum. I think that's a positive force. And this is where I think those who will play on the one-third of Canadians who don't agree with that, it's a bit irresponsible.
So the rallies that we saw last week, you don't think they're going away?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think, again, we need to be a bit more sophisticated about trying to figure out, okay, who is attending these events? Who is supporting these views? What are their motives? And as Zach said, you know, treat people as free-thinking people who have a political point of view, who are drawn to an Ezra Levant or to a Kelly Leach, and take them at face value and ask them, okay, what is it that you want? What do you want your government to do? Why are you drawn to this? Instead of kind of, you know, treating people as this is some kind of crazy alt-right thing. Yeah, that's there. But I think we need to work a bit harder to look at a political movement and who is it that's involved.
Well, Alan, this has been great to talk to you. You're probably the best person to talk to. There's a number of frames in which to look at this. And if I didn't mention it, Alan's prime beat was immigration and refugees when he was at the Star as well. So again, I couldn't have picked a better person to listen in on this. And thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks for the invitation.
So I'd love to know what you thought of that discussion. I think I was struck by the fact that these two journalists had to actually insert themselves personally into a story, that the kind of journalism I was trained to do was that you would stand at the back and fade into to the woodwork. And whether it was Sarah with her clothing or Zach with his video camera, they weren't fading away. They were actually part of the action. They were actually part of the story. So, and an interesting story it is too, and I don't think it's going to stop being interesting. So I think that's, we should keep our eye on Zach and Sarah. I think we're going to be hearing more from them. I'd be curious to know what you think of Zach, Sarah, or our friend Alan Thompson. There's a number of ways you can reach us on Twitter at Canada2020 or email briefremarks@canada2020.ca. And please do think about rating, reviewing, or even subscribing. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week.